Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and hopefully fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you who, like me, have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission is to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they are doing so, to appreciate the deceptions that they are deploying. Because exposing and condemning such errant and treacherous schemes, especially when they are religious and political, isn't hateful. It's the most compassionate and the wisest thing we can do. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah and prophets. Torah means teaching, not law, and its liberating, enriching, empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-376-45. A friend of mine sent me an email this morning talking about a pastor of a mega church in Florida. 20,000 devotees of this Calvary Chapel in Florida. The pastor, who is married, has admitted that he was having an affair with a married woman. And so he has had to say that he was has failed his congregation and is therefore resigning. Now, I find that interesting because, of course, Christians base their religion on free gifts, on being free from legalism, of being distanced from the law. And therefore, the instruction that Yahweh etched in stone, you should not make a practice of habitually committing adultery, should not apply to them. After all, they've distanced themselves from what they call the law. Doesn't apply to them anymore. Should have forgiveness, right? You know, it's interesting that Dodd was a regular practitioner of adultery. He had a harem. And while God was not pleased with his harem, the fact is that he was never removed from power as a result of having an adulterous affair. It strikes me that the Christians who claim that they are free of the rules are actually tied up in them. And those of us who observe the Torah are actually the ones who are liberated. It's an interesting insight into the nature of religion versus relationship. The same friend sent me an email this morning on a new book entitled A Nation of Victims, The Decay of American Character. It was written by Charles Sykes. Now, I don't know Charles Sykes from Adam. I have not read the book, haven't even read a review on the book. But there's some interesting insights here that I think are worth our consideration. When we focus on victims, as opposed to having people focus on the victimizers and having people that are promoted and acclaimed and celebrated, who have the courage and the wisdom, the dedication, the compassion to expose and condemn the victimizers, that's character. Those are examples that are worthy of acknowledging. But focusing on the victims, there's no benefit whatsoever there. Oh, we're going to focus on the victims so we feel better that, hey, it wasn't me that lost my legs in a suicide bomb, as opposed to what was it that motivated the bombers? Are we afraid to have some backbone? Because Muslims play dirty and that if you have the courage and wisdom to expose Islam as the motivation for 99% of today's terrorist acts, that somehow, some way, by doing that you're going to put yourself in harm's way, and we no longer have the character to do that. So let's wallow instead and focus on the victims. This very story is, you know, making the headlines today about the 20 staff and children that were knifed at a school. It's all focused on the victims. So is the Sandy Hook example, all fixated on the victims. You know, it shows a complete depravity of character. And it's what we've become. If that's his conclusion, he's right in his A Nation of Victims, the decay of the American character. He says that we now have a culture which celebrates being victimized. CNN ran a story about one young woman who tragically lost her leg in the Boston Marathon bombing. But after reading the story, I wondered why this friend of mine who wrote this email to me said, I wondered why that they didn't mention the motivation of the bomber. They never once mentioned Islam's role. They never once said we could prevent acts like this if we took a stand against Islamic terrorism. No, the whole thing was, wow, she lost her leg, but she's really a devoted victim, and therefore she'll be able to dance again. I mean, there's something incredibly sad about that. Almost no one. I mean, today, you'll listen to the radio, you'll listen to the television, and they'll all focus on the tragedy that was perpetrated on these 20 individuals. And they will talk about school violence and say, boy, look what it's doing. But no one will focus on what has caused it. Why are children and adults unable to act morally? Why can't they exercise good judgment? What have we done to ourselves that causes this situation? And the answers are fairly straightforward. If it's an act of terrorism, it's most always perpetrated by Islam. And all you have to do is look at Muhammad and the Quran and Sunnah, the Hadith, and you recognize that they're following Muhammad's example. If we want to eliminate 99.9% of terrorism in the world today, all we have to do is combat Islam. Simple. As for children acting up badly in school, the vast preponderance of them are medicated. They're taking drugs, going on and off of mind-altering drugs. And in school, the socialist secular humanists have established their religion, whereby political correctness is the moral code, and being judgmental is the ultimate crime. And so we have educated, indoctrinated, if you will, an entire generation of monsters. But no one wants to say that. No one wants to hold teachers accountable. No one wants to hold politicians accountable. No one wants to hold the psychiatrist accountable for prescribing these drugs. But that's almost always the case. In fact, I did a study about 9 months ago, after one of the school shootings, to see if there was a common denominator between the those who perpetrated mass killings at school. And there was. Universal. They were prescribed and had gone on and off mind-altering drugs. Prescription medications prescribed by psychiatrists and psychologists. And, of course, the other common denominator, they're all a product of today's education system in the West, which encourages people not to be judgmental. Hi, Glenn. Welcome.
Good morning, Anna. Yeah, let's not forget people wounded in sports victory riot.
Yeah.
That type of thing. Yeah, sports build character, don't you know? But, no, about all this, you know, I've been thinking about this stuff recently, and, you know, we're constantly given all of this, you know, all these horrible victim things that we're obsessed with, whether it's the air crash or whatever. And, you know, it just strikes me, you know, that there's this morbid, voyeuristic, obsessive nature to it. And it's also, like, very unhealthy because before all this information could be transmitted worldwide and constantly, you know, people would hear of something bad, you know, perhaps long after it happened or even, you know, but it wouldn't be this total fixation. And,
right.
You know, and you're emphasizing fixation on the victims.
Right.
Every day, and I was thinking, you know, You know, in psychology, you look at, like, appropriate grieving, you know, versus an appropriate identification with loss or pain versus,
right.
you know, vicariously getting too much into somebody else's business.
Right.
Every day, 150,000 human beings die on this planet. Every day.
We cannot
grieve for them all, and it's unhealthy to try.
Of course. But what's revealing here is that we're focusing on how to survive victimization, and we're wallowing in the victim's pain and agony, rather than focusing on how to stop victimizers and how to prevent future pain and agony. It's just we've lost our way. Our focus is so upended that we're upside down.
Right. Well, we're obviously not teaching children how to deal with frustration and anger.
No.
You know, like, it's normal to be...
No, you go play... Right. Yeah, you go play one of the video games. And, you know, that's how you deal with your anger. You take it out on a driver or a war game or a first-person shooter. That's how you deal with your anger. Go and take it out in a video game. We just aren't... We as a nation have indoctrinated generations of people who are no longer able to be rational, to exercise moral discernment. They're no longer able to exercise good judgment. And when you can't exercise good judgment, you can't be moral. You can't be just. You no longer benefit from free will. You can't be civil. Society degrades to anarchy, and people are all end up victimized when that occurs.
And on that note, if I may, just do a sideways segue for just a minute to something
sure.
we talked about Friday. I forgot to mention this.
Yeah.
Right at the very moment when you were talking about America being the nation of the flying machines, the machines that buzz, and the helicopters, as Yahweh is my witness, at that moment, I was outside, and there were two police helicopters hovering less than 1,000 feet above my premises. And then within a few minutes, there were three different police cars from two different police departments parked along the side of my house on the road. It had nothing to do with me. They were looking for a couple fleeing on foot who were running a meth lab in a nearby motel.
Yep, we're doing it to ourselves as well as doing it to our neighbors around the world. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This incident at the Pittsburgh High School reminds me of the recap of the incident at Fort Hood. Either one of them, the two shootings. Most recently, rather than dealing with the fact that serving in Iraq messed with one's mind, and it's impossible for someone to come back and be normal after that experience because, A, you know that your government lied to you, that there were no weapons of mass destruction that were hidden by Saddam Hussein, that al-Qaeda had no presence in Iraq prior to the time that we intervened, and number three, that the people our government and our military said we were there to liberate were the very people that were trying to kill us, that Saddam Hussein's military never fought. We only fought civilians. And the people we were fighting on behalf of were disgusting. And so you serve there, and it will affect your life forever. And so here's a fellow that in the case of Fort Hood, endured that and came back altered. And like so many, he ended up taking his own life. Couldn't deal with the agony of it, couldn't deal with the conflict of it, couldn't deal with the fact that, you know, he had sworn an oath to defend the Constitution and to act on behalf of the political leaders, and they had made a mockery of this whole thing. He had to face reality and didn't like what he saw. And yet, the military wants to make it out as, oh, it's just an act of violence where he had an argument and couldn't handle the stress of the argument. Well, his argument was he wanted freedom. He wanted to be free of the military. He asked for leave. They denied it. Now, there are core reasons here. Lack of freedom in the military. Lack of free will in the military. And then the use of our military by our government to make bad situations worse. Cause and effect. We did not spend any time as a nation identifying the cause that led to the effect. The same thing will be true here in Pittsburgh. They'll scrutinize the knives and where the knives were purchased. They'll tell us the names of the victims and how many times they were stabbed. They will tell us how long the event occurred and which teacher ultimately or principal stopped the person from slashing. But they won't tell us about the medication that the individual was on, the psychiatric treatment that he may or may not have been undergoing, or the fact that for now generations, we have medicated people that to the extent that they're no longer responsible, and we have indoctrinated people so they can no longer exercise good judgment. We'll never look at what the actual cause of the events that we are witnessing there. Now, I've got another story here that also shows you that even adults in a jury situation are incapable of exercising good judgment. This story is from Reuters. It reads, Takeda Pharmaceutical Company Limited said that it would contest a $6 billion award of punitive damages imposed by a U.S. federal jury in a case alleging Japan's largest drug maker had concealed cancer risks associated with his Actos diabetes drug. Now, here's the truth, folks. Every drug that we conceive to keep people alive longer who are suffering from debilitating diseases has a side effect. Most of them, many side effects. And so the question is, are you willing for the elongation of your life, say with diabetes? Are you willing to take the drug knowing that there are risks? And if you don't think there are risks, if you are pretending to be, I'm purely a victim here, then you're just stupid. You know, and ignorance isn't bliss, it's deadly. Every drug that is produced has side effects. Now, the reason that we choose to take them when we have a debilitating illness is because the vast preponderance of people benefit and a minimal number of people don't. They are harmed by the drug. That's just the nature of things. It's always the case. It has always been the case. It will always be the case. But here we have health care that is prohibitively expensive, and everyone's griping over the cost of medications, and they want to point their finger at big pharmaceutical companies. Well, you know the reason that the drugs cost so much, the reason that we're bankrupt in terms of our ability to supply affordable medical care? Is because of idiot decisions like this. Awarding $6 billion in punitive damages? It's absurd. Because there's a side effect associated with a drug that combats diabetes? What's wrong with these morons? What's wrong with your judicial system? No longer just. Welcome back to The Shattering Myth. When you have a jury that awards $6 billion in punitive damages because they claim that a drug maker concealed potential cancer risks that are associated with a diabetes drug, you show that they have lost the ability to reason. It is unreasonable. The consequences are devastating. The number of people who will suffer with diseases, the number of drugs that will not come to market because of awards like this is a very serious problem. The fact that countries will be bankrupt and individuals will be bankrupt trying to pay for medication that is artificially expensive because of litigation like this is a cause and effect. That's the reality. Now, if you want to sue somebody for not concealing potential cancer risk from a drug, sue the FDA. This drug had to pass a billion-dollar FDA series of trials. So if there is fault, fault the FDA. But, you know, it's this idea, again, of victimization. Oh, you know, we ought to be, let's focus on the victims. Now, this particular case, a federal judge overturned a previous award in this particular case, saying that there was no evidence that the drug actually caused cancer. And here, just on the possibility that it may cause cancer, which, by the way, almost everything can, you know, can cause. Somebody wants to just pen them with $6 billion in punitive damages. To show you how out of whack that is with the award, there were the injuries alleged to this drug were so minor that the award for injury, the compensation for injury, was $1.475 million. $1.5 million is what the jury provided the victims, saying that's what they're entitled to make them whole. $1.475 million. And they ascribe a $6 billion punitive damage on the pharmaceutical company? It's just so out of whack. It's so unrealistic. It's so utterly counterproductive that you wonder, how is it that these jurors were even chosen? Because obviously they're incapable of rational thought. Now the largest punitive damage award ever was $9 billion. And it was awarded by a jury against Takeda and Lilly. And it exceeded the $5 billion jury award that was imposed on ExxonMobil. But in that case of ExxonMobil, since they paid for the cleanup, a federal judge said, you know, that's absurd. And ultimately ordered them to pay $500 million in damages, which they, after they did the cleanup, they gave to fishermen in the area and the likes. So here's a case where the compensation for the alleged victims is just over $1 million, and the punishment for the perpetrator is $6 billion. It's out of the realm of the even grotesque imagination. No wonder that so few people take Yahweh up on his covenant offer. They're incapable of understanding what he's offering or what is expected of them. Can't process the information. It's like the religious fellow the other day that called in trying to justify Hebrew Roots movement and is unable to see the conflict between Paul and Yahweh. And if you point them out, can't process it. Just goes on to the next point. This is a story, just a quick mention, but a veteran Associated Press photographer who had covered wars around the world was shot dead, along with another reporter who was wounded last Friday, when an Afghan policeman, that means someone that was on America's payroll, was firing an American weapon and shot a bullet made in this country, opened fire on them in eastern Afghanistan. We ought not have given weapons to the Afghanis. We ought not have invaded Afghanistan, and we ought not have given weapons to the Afghanis. That was stupid. That was the consequence of that. This journalist is dead, and his associate is badly wounded. But you don't see America accepting blame. And it's America that is responsible for that death. Reuters is reporting that Russia's push to deploy a domestic electronic payment system is designed to reduce its reliance on the West and to overcome the country's strong cash culture. When Obama said that he was restricting the credit card use of Russians that were in alliance with Putin, requiring Visa and MasterCard to stop serving a particular Russian bank. When I read that, the first thing I said is what this is going to do is to diminish the role that the American firms play in world commerce, because every country in the world, every banker in the world is going to see, well, if the U.S. president can dictate the business alliances that are made with an American company, then they can use them against anyone. And so the moment we did that, the natural consequence of Obama's stupidity was that Russia and China and European countries, countries around the world, are all working now to develop their own electronic currency mechanisms. That was the natural consequence. It was inevitable. And yet, the condescender-in-chief of America couldn't see it. And the Senate and Congress voted almost unanimously to impose the sanction because they were too stupid to see what the consequence was going to be. You know, in the New World Order that is going to rally around the beast, this outgrowth of the Roman Empire, electronic currency is going to be the order of the day. That is how the beast is going to secure allegiance. That's how he's going to control. And now what you have is a rush for countries around the world to eliminate the cash culture and to move exclusively to electronic currency. And our actions over Crimea in the Ukraine are precipitated this. We've made situations worse because we were unable to equate cause and consequence. So prompted by the suspension of Visa and MasterCard services to Bank Russia because of Western sanctions over Crimea, Russian officials have revived attempts to create a national electronic payment system. We certainly must do this, and we will do it, Russian President Vladimir Putin said last week. It's really too bad that certain companies have been told to impose restrictions. I think this will simply cause them to lose large segments of the market, very profitable market segments. But that's what America has done now to its largest and most prosperous companies. With the NSA forcing through the hidden court system, electronic companies, internet-based companies, software companies, social networking companies to all turn over all of the information on their users' use of their services, access to their emails, their clicks, their communications. It's now a situation where that when a project needs to be done, a large project for a business or for a public entity, anywhere in the world, the American technologies are not even, companies are not even allowed to bid because they know that they are controlled by the NSA and that there will be no security in association doing business with them. So IBM, Hewlett-Packard, Microsoft, Google, Apple, not even able to bid Facebook. No matter what the foreign government or foreign business is trying to achieve, they have specifically excluded the American companies, just as Visa and MasterCard are now being excluded and governments around the world are seeking alternatives. We've done this to ourselves. Rather than rally around American businesses and encourage their growth worldwide, we've stunted it. This article continues to read, after the United States imposed sanctions on officials believed to be close to Vladimir Putin and Russia Bank, which Washington said was the personal bank of the leaders of the inner circle, Moscow has signaled a shift towards Asian markets and told businessmen to bring their assets home. Stop doing business in America. No, there's some real serious consequences of that. There are things that we are absolutely dependent upon Russia for. Titanium happens to be one of them. There are many domestic payment systems out there. So the question is, can Russia do it? Piece of cake, says David Robertson, publisher of an industry publication, the Nielsen Report, happens to be here in Carpinteria, California. What matters is crossing a border, whether it's your own citizens who want to travel or vice versa. However, the fact of the matter is that China, starting about 2 or 3 years ago, recognizing American malfeasance in its banking laws, successfully created an international electronic currency delivery system. Part of what has America in a bit of upheaval is the gender gap. Now, just the other day, President Obama passed legislation saying that he wanted the gender gap in compensation to be narrowed, and he passed executive orders to achieve that. Now, the fact of the matter is that the most comprehensive studies of gender gap says that there's less than a 4% difference between what a comparable man and a comparable woman actually make. And that the notion that the gap is larger than that is based entirely on bad research and invalid comparisons. It is an inconsequential gap. But there is another gap. Welcome back to Shattering This. So while the income gap is essentially non-existent today, there is another growing gender gap that is extraordinarily meaningful, and it is upending society. Now, I don't want to be a sexist here and to say, you know, society works best when men earn a living and women become mothers and do the most important job in the world, which is to mother, to do what only they can do with the young children. Throughout my life, I have hired an equal number of men and women in executive positions and in worker bee positions. My wife worked for a living. Now, she stopped working when our children were young, and she has resumed working now that our children are grown. But I can tell you that children grow up better. They're more secure. They're better prepared for life when mom and dad work together as a team to raise them. Dads are not nearly as nurturing as mothers. Stay-at-home dads aren't as good at raising children as moms are. Now, it's not to say that, you know, if your marriage doesn't work and mom moves away and wants nothing to do with the children, that the dad can't do a marvelous job. He can. But on average, generally, moms are better at it than dads. And what we're finding now is in colleges, society is being deliberately jerry-rigged to make moms the breadwinner and dads inconsequential. A federal survey of about 9,000 young men and women born during the years 1980 to 1984 shows a big disparity when it comes to higher education, with women a third more likely to receive a bachelor degree by age 27. While it has been long known that women are outpacing men when it comes to pursuing higher education, the extensive study by the Bureau of Labor Statistics highlighted several numbers that show the trend is actually accelerating. I've brought this trend to your attention many times because of the upheaval nature it'll have on society. Men are now fish out of water, irrelevant to a large degree. And there are aspects of men that are beneficial for society. Men typically are willing to take a stand. They're willing to be a bit more courageous. They're willing to bow their back against adversity and against evil. But they're being neutralized. You know, men are more focused, more competitive. One of the things I learned when I was going to get LASIK on my eyes, and my issue is that I can see distant vision with my left eye fairly well, but neither eye can I read something without glasses. And so what I wanted is what so many women have had, and I heard so many successful stories with LASIK. I wanted one eye with my lens such that I could read close up, and the other so that it would focus effectively on distance. Because the brain, as I understood it, would focus on the eye for each application. And what I was told is that works for women won't work for men. Our brains are wired differently. A woman is able to multitask. She's able to, for example, take care of a home and raise children simultaneously. Men can't multitask. That's not to say that it's impossible, but our brains, for a man, don't multitask. We are very focused. Now, there's a reason for that. And it's, you know, if you, for most of humanity, man was out trying to gather in food and defend the home, and unless you're really focused on the prey or the adversary, you're going to be victimized by both. And so men are focused. Women can multitask. Difference. Celebrate the difference. You know, my wife's very different than I am. It's wonderful. It's what makes a marriage complete. There's synergy in that, but not in what we're trying to do. This article says this is a really an important phenomenon, and it hasn't happened overnight. No, it's been designed. It was jury-rigged this way. You know, in colleges today, on average, two-thirds of the students are women. It's between 65 and 70% in most colleges today, and that percentage is growing. The disparity is growing, with women representing two-thirds of collegians and men only one-third. Men are being left behind. The role of the man is being eliminated from our society. We'll be back in a moment.